RCE at 107.7 FM, W299 CD, Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Federal aviation investigators heading to the scene of last night's helicopter crash in the California desert. All six people on board feared dead.
The helicopter crashed southwest of here near Nipton, California, a community in the Mojave Desert along Interstate 15, which is the main route between L.A. and Las Vegas. It had taken off from Burbank, stopped in Palm Springs, unclear if it was to refuel or to pick up passengers. Then it continued flying in the direction of Las Vegas. The San Bernardino County Sheriff Department saying no survivors have been found. Alex Stone, ABC News, Las Vegas.
Early voting begins in South Carolina Monday. GOP candidates are out campaigning this weekend. Frontrunner Donald Trump holding a get-out-the-vote rally today in Conway. Rival Nikki Haley set off on a two-week bus tour in her home state where she served as governor. Fan frenzy building in Las Vegas ahead of tomorrow's Super Bowl. Security also heightened with helicopters and drones being used overhead. This is ABC News. In Ohio, a woman leads police on a wild car chase. ABC's Dave Packer has details on how it all ended.
It all started Wednesday when police say a person spotted their stolen car on the streets of Columbus, Ohio. Police called the driver of the stolen car, 32-year-old Heather Graham, dangerously speeding through neighborhoods when she drove into a gas station, an officer on foot from his body cam.
Stop the car!
Then that officer jumping onto the hood of the car, shooting into the windshield. Graham shot but kept driving, finally stopped on a freeway, taken into custody and recovering from the gunshots. The shot officer released from the hospital. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Graham had outstanding 2020 warrant. The name on the shot of the officer was not released. Thinking about buying a car, industry experts say now may be the time. Inventory is bouncing back from pre-pandemic lows due to that supply chain issue, and now consumers have more choices. This is ABC News.
It's Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils with Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny. Weeknights at 7 on News from the Center, 107.7 FM and 1450 AM WRCE. And on the Civic Media app. Matt Nair on air.
I heard that new promo featuring Pearl and Sandy Williams talking about being influencers. Now I cannot get the vision out of my head of those two doing TikToks.
I think we should do a series of videos of Calvin teaching them how to be influencers, like teaching them how to dance.
I'm not going to say I don't dance, but I'm not a good dancer, so I don't know.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on News from the Center, WRCE, and the Civic Media app. It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Hopes for reviving the expanded federal child tax credit got a big boost when the plan recently passed the U.S. House. If it eventually becomes law, advocates for low-income families say it would go a long way in fighting poverty. Here's Mike Moan.
The U.S. House passed a bipartisan tax bill that includes a three-year expansion of the child tax credit. Analysts say it isn't as robust as the one-year expansion from 2021, but a key provision would allow families with little or no income to gain eligibility. Tim Smeeting, a retired economist with the University of Wisconsin, says it could allow struggling households to address a big expense they haven't been able to cover.
You can pay heating bills that you've let go because you know that the utility won't shut you off.
He says eliminating those debts frees up money for families to spend on children's needs. Despite bipartisan support in the House, the bill faces an uncertain future in the Senate, with pushback from both Republicans and Democrats. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities estimates that in the first year, expanding the child tax credit will lift as many as 400,000 kids above the poverty line. The Center's Chris Cox says while there are calls to bring back the original expansion, this bill would still make a difference.
Half of kids who don't get the full credit now, their families will gain $600. Or more from the bill, and about 40% of kids who don't get the full credit now, their families will gain $1,000 or more from this bill.
Bill sponsors hope to get final approval so qualifying households could claim the credit on this year's taxes. Cox says if you file earlier, the measure instructs the IRS to make good on your return. Wisconsin has an earned income tax credit, but the state is often cited as having a regressive tax structure that hurts low-income households. Experts say the federal plan would ease that burden. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bowne.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Richland Center weather. I'm Corey Hartman for today. Becoming sunny by this afternoon. We'll see a high near 39. A few clouds move back in tonight with a low of 23. Gradually becoming sunny on your Sunday with high temps around 40. For Monday, sunshine 45. Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high near 41.
Right now, it's 41.
From Hillsboro to Highland, your choice for news, talk, and sports is News from the Center, WRCE, 1450 AM and 107.7 FM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Up first on this weekend's edition of Civic Media Spotlight, we head to the network's newest daily show, Busted Pencils, for a conversation surrounding the shortage among special education teachers.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Johnny Lupinacci, I see you, man. You look great. How are you doing,
hey,
my friend?
Doing all right. Doing all right. It's Tuesday, you know, second day of the work week. So, you know,
this is our normal day, right? Typically, right? We've been doing Tuesdays for what, 5 years now, and here it is, you know, Tuesday. But we were on Monday last week. You know, in case you're wondering what we're talking about, it's Busted Pencils 5 days a week now: Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Check it out. And if you're somewhere else, you know, make sure you're out there, download the Civic Media app. That way you can listen to us wherever you are on your phone. Johnny, great guest, great show tonight. We have covered, though, this topic. We're going to get a little bit more in depth. Hey, news out there to the world. There's a teacher shortage right now. Just in case anybody hasn't been paying attention, and that would be you, my neighbor, who we're talking to. My neighbor, there's a teacher shortage. However, Johnny,
who knew?
But before we get to our guest, I know producer Anya has queued up a piece. We're going to listen to a little segment here.
7.5 million American students, or roughly 15% of them, have disabilities that qualify them for special instruction, what's known as individual education plans. But teachers trained in this critical area are in short supply. At the beginning of the current school year, 70% of schools surveyed said they had openings for special education teachers. We asked special education teachers and administrators to tell us how the shortage is affecting them.
You're spread thin, you know, and you're working with a student on a lesson to meet their academic goals, but you're also thinking about the student behind you who's working on maybe feeding or they're getting their medications, and you're thinking, how can I support that student when I'm working with another?
There it is, Johnny. Special education teacher shortage. Well, let's get to our guest. Our guest, she has broad expertise in the preparation of teachers who work with students with disabilities and providing instruction to students with disabilities to improve their long-term academic and social behavioral outcomes. She is currently the Director of Teacher Education and Certification Officer for UW-Madison, University of Wisconsin-Madison. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Dr. Kimber Wilkerson. Kimber, how are you?
I am doing well. It's so nice to be here.
It's so nice to see you, man. It's been a while. I, you know, Johnny Kimber and I, you know, used to in the Wisconsin, you know, made some noise at the time.
Okay. Look great.
So, Kimber, that was from the piece that was on, I think it was National Public Radio, where they're talking about this. Kimber, there's a teacher education shortage. Lay it out for us. Like, what's happening? Why? What's going on? First response. What do we do? That's what's going to be the whole show. So you're not going to obviously answer all those questions. But, Kim, how did we get to a special education teacher shortage?
Well, there has always been a special education teacher shortage. So, you know, special education became, mandatory in public schools in the 70s. And even from the beginning, there were not enough teachers to fill the openings. And there were certain kinds of, assignments within special education that had the most kind of chronic shortages. So any job where people were going to work directly with kids with, significant needs, kids with emotional, behavioral kinds of challenges, those mm-hmm. were positions that people were least likely to want. Right. They left them quickly. So there's always been this kind of this clawing around trying to find people to fill these positions. And then, in the last 10 years, as there's been more of a, shortage, and I put that in air quotes, but
yeah,
as there have been less, teachers interested in staying in their jobs or less people entering the field, that's kind of hit special education even harder. Right. So it was the position that people were less interested in from the beginning, and then, just hit harder within all of this.
I like the way that, not like, but there's always been a shortage of special education teachers. And you point out, though, too, because it's hard work. And all teaching, and Johnny and I are going to say all teaching's hard work. But special education, it's hard work, and people potentially looked and said, yeah, I saw that as a potential opportunity for me when I was learning to be a teacher. And I said, no, I can't do that. That's not my passion. That's not where I see my ability to do my best work. But boy, I can see people who get in there and go, like, they need to be there. They're the best. And you just think about, these are our children who, they have the significant needs. Let's be honest. It's crisis, isn't it, Kimber?
I'd say it feels that way in many schools and districts. Yes. I was just going to say this issue of I do think there's, in some ways, special ed always has a PR problem, and that might extend to the general society and the way we think about disability. That people see something as being very challenging instead of thinking, well, this is just the spectrum of way people present in life. And, we don't necessarily have to treat people with differences all that differently, but of course there is specialized knowledge. And of course there are, skills and, things that people need to know about the law. So I'm not suggesting that it doesn't take some kind of specialized knowledge. And I'm not suggesting that there might be some people with certain personalities or, ways of approaching difference that might make them better for the job. But I do think, I feel like it's almost like a PR problem for disability, combined with a PR problem for being a teacher. Right.
Well, there's so much in that, the way you say it's just, okay, special education. I could, right now I could see my neighbor going, oh, those kids. Well, yeah, I don't know who's going to work with those kids. Or I remember those kids. Or, hey, I used to hang out with one of those kids. Johnny, did you have any of those kids in your classrooms?
Absolutely. But I've taught both in special education classroom and then in what we called at the time mainstreamed. Coming back to this, I think, you're both talking about this crisis on top of a crisis, and it's a larger understanding of how we in general approach becoming a teacher, right? And the certain dispositions and the certain ways, from go. We also, within even our own programs, Tim, we talk about this a lot, right? We separated out special education and education and regular education as though there's this mystical different thing that happens. And Dr. Wilkerson talked to this, there are certainly things that special educators, I even hate that term, right? Except they absolutely are superstar educators, right? But the idea that
that we've set up this separation or this exclusionary way of understanding what's required of being a great teacher. And fortunately for myself, I mean, I didn't realize that some of the best teachers that would mentor me as a new teacher and as even a veteran teacher always learning were special educators, but a different kind of focus from experts who were teaching them to be teachers through a lens I wish we all had. And and Dr. Wilkinson brings us this tremendous ability to discern and embrace and value difference. Right. I truly believe that, and I hate these terms special education, that really good special educators and special education programs make the best teachers. And it's not easy, but they do a great job because the capacity to handle that we have learners with different needs, that some we can see those different needs, some we have to learn about them, but we have to have flexibility and capacity to understand those differences and to value them and to value that there is a person learning in that classroom. There is always a person first learning, and that, you know, we've somehow, again, like we've picked on schools for a long time, sorted it out in a way that doesn't quite exactly make sense for all that we know about how we live to how we ought to live together in communities, in families, and that's why I know the terms are really problematic, but I really enjoy teaching. It was kind of called a mainstreamed program because we had the supports. We had special educators and regular educators. We had good educators working together. We had supports that made our classroom communities more like the communities we were realistically not only living in, but wanted to be living in, where we embraced one another as members of our classroom community with those differences.
I wonder if this is, though, too, maybe a little bit of terminology here. Kimber, IEP, okay, and Johnny was talking about, you know, differences in students. IEP stands for what?
Individualized Education Program. And so essentially this is a document, right, that lays out what this individual kid needs that is going to be different or distinct or, you know, additional to what every other student, whether you call that regular or you call that general, you know, like whatever you call those, that classroom of students, typical. So if a student needs something additional, an adaptation, a modification, a change, they need some special services, they need access to a speech language pathologist, they need access to adaptive equipment, you know, all different kinds of things they might need. And those are laid out in that document, that individualized education program.
Well, and the way you said it too, I think for people to understand the spectrum or the continuum of recognizing, you know, what is special education? Well, it could be an intellectual issue. It can be physical. It can be physical and intellectual at the same time. But recognizing what we said is that there are differences. And that some children have a little bit more of an emphasis, I'd say, on some of those differences that requires teachers with a specialized knowledge to be able to look at, work with, develop that individual education plan, because that individual has those needs a little bit above and beyond, quote, the classroom. And so...
Busted Pencils is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday evenings at 7. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Getting your biggest tax refund from Jackson Hewitt can lead to some spirited reactions.
Jackson Hewitt, yeah!
Jackson Hewitt is so sure that you'll get your biggest refund that if they don't, you get your money back plus $100.
Jackson Hewitt, yeah!
And Jackson Hewitt also guarantees the accuracy of your return for life. So don't just sit there. For your biggest refund guaranteed, walk into a Jackson Hewitt today and dance out Jackson Hewitt, yeah!
Max Inc. Radio invites you to a live concert each week over the radio. It's Live in the Lair on Max Inc. Saturday night. It's a full hour of live music and in-depth interviews with the artist. Listen across Civic Media every Saturday at 9 p.m. and grab the podcast at maxincradio.com. Live in the Lair, presented by the Aaron Weber Group at movetomadison.com. Max Inc. on Civic Media. We are local music.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRC.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. We now head down to southeastern Wisconsin for the Don Rosen Show, where Don had a conversation with Mark Hertzberg and Lee Wissow about bringing a dedicated ice center to Racine County. Enjoy.
It's 7:07 at WRJN Radio. I'm Don Rosen. Thanks for joining us here on a, I'm going to say confused, Tuesday morning. You know, it's written on the screen Tuesday, and I sit here every morning. I wonder what day it is. Mark Hertzberg is here. Thank you very much, Mark. Mark is the secretary, and it's the Racine County Ice Center. Got that right. You're the secretary, but we got the chairman. The campaign chairman is here, too. Lee Wishaw is here. And thank you guys for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
And Mark is so authentic. He's actually wearing a New York Rangers hockey jersey, which is really good. You know, the Admirals are still here in town, right? They still in Milwaukee?
They are. Okay. Yes. They're a farm team, I think, for the Nashville Predators.
Oh, are they now? Okay. Yeah, because they were, what was the name of the league they were in at one time? It's
the American International Hockey. Oh, International.
The International Hockey League.
Yeah, they were in USHL years ago, and then the International League, and then now the AHL.
Turn that thing toward you a little bit there.
Sorry. Yeah, and Racine's Craig Leopold was the first owner of the Nashville Predators.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I love hockey. Hockey's a fast-moving sport. I love to watch it. When I lived on Long Island, we used to go to the Islanders games all the time. Or occasionally went into the garden to go watch the Rangers in the city, which was always fun. Okay, so we're talking ice rink here. Now, people say, gee, don't we have an ice rink in town? Well, if you think we have an ice rink or an ice skating center in town, you haven't looked lately. We used to have one at Festival Hall.
There are two ice skating facilities in Kenosha County. When our boys and I played hockey, we had to go to Kenosha. When I coached one of our sons, 5 o'clock Sunday morning, we had to go. Milwaukee has several facilities.
Well, the one at the State Fair Park is huge.
Right. Yeah. There's Wilson Park, and Waukesha County has got several facilities. There's nothing in Racine County. And what we want to do is to have a year-round ice skating facility. We've been working with the county for more than 4 years on this, and we hope to have this open in a couple years, probably in Franksville. And this is something for year-round recreation. It's a recreation opportunity that's not available in our community now. People have to go out of town. They have to spend their money out of town, take advantage of this. This is something that's going to bring dollars into Racine County as we host tournaments and competitions. And it's also going to be an important recruiting tool for companies. As they look at people who are considering jobs here, some of the people are going to say, well, can I take advantage of ice sports in Racine County? Do I want to relocate to Racine County?
Now, well, let me ask you, is it where the park is? Is that what you're talking
about? That is a likely location, okay. If not possibly Haben Park, which is also out in the Franksville area. But, you know, one of the county considerations is as to why Racine County should be the magnet for ice sports for our residents. There's somebody that our kids grew up with. I played hockey with them, and their sons now play hockey. They live in Mount Pleasant. Their parents pulled them out of Racine Unified, and the kids now go to school at Kenosha Unified because Kenosha's got a varsity hockey team.
Now, if you build one out in Franksville, you got to start from scratch. There's no building out there for this, right?
Correct.
So you got it's. What kind of money are you looking at to build one of these things?
Well, we is RCIC. We're a 501c3. We self-funded, there's no county money in this part of it, a feasibility study. We sent out proposals to three nationally recognized feasibility study companies. And we spent $70,000 of our money. And the feasibility study says that this is doable and it will be successful. It would be successful.
Now, is there a lot of interest from the
public?
There
is. That's part of the feasibility study. And you asked about where we are. We had an estimate of $13 million for a single sheet ice facility. And ideally, we would like two sheets of ice, but we would build it.
Now, what does that mean, two sheets of ice?
Two rinks.
Okay.
Two skating surfaces. And we had an estimate of $13 million. So we committed to raise $8 million, and we have a memorandum of understanding with the county that we hope the county board supervisors will approve, where the county would bond $5 million. We have self-upped our ante to $10 million. We've pledged to raise $10 million. And so even though the county would be responsible for hiring the designers, the architects, the builders, and then the county will hire a third party to manage the rink, we are going to raise two-thirds of the money for this county facility.
Have you begun yet?
We have. Okay. And Lee can speak as to where we are, but that's unheard of, I think, for a county facility to have two-thirds private funding.
Now, where will this? Now, I know the one at State Fair Park is an Olympic training facility. Is that the size, though, you're looking at, or smaller than that?
That is a two-sheet facility, two ice sheet facilities. Plus, there's a speed skating oval that circles that facility, and it is a massive building. We're not looking at a building quite that size. We will not be putting in a speed skating oval.
Okay, so what happened to the one at Festival Park? Because when I first moved here in 1980, that was an active ice skating rink. People skated there. Now it's just an empty place they could put, you know, vendors and stuff for different events coming to town.
It was very, very successful. It was packed. I don't know if there was a problem with the design, but, excuse me, the refrigeration system failed. And the predecessor to RCIC was close to having a rink in Pritchard Park about 25 years ago. And there was an estimate of $300,000 to fix the refrigeration system. And then Mayor Jim Smith said, I'd rather put that money into the year-round facility in Pritchard Park. And our facility was approved by the county board. The bonds were going to be sold on a Monday, Friday before then-Governor Scott McCallum ended shared revenue, and the county executive took the bond sale off the table. So the facility didn't happen in Pritchard Park, and the city didn't fix the one in Festival Park.
Is it fixable now, or is it so far gone you couldn't do anything?
It's been so long, nobody's talked about it, but you would rather put the money into a year-round facility that can accommodate sports.
Yeah, that was only for the winter use,
right?
Festival Park.
And you couldn't play hockey. There wasn't much that you could do on there other than skate. I mean, skating was important, and it introduced a lot of people to skating.
Now, that looked big to me. It's just maybe because I'm not used to seeing big rinks, but that looked big to me.
It was tiny.
It was tiny, but we had a tinier one. Actually, we're going to talk about this in just a moment. Monument Square, they tried to put an ice rink, and I saw it when I drove by. We'll talk about that in a minute. Mark Hertzberg is here, and Lee Wishaw is here, and we're talking about the Racine Ice Center project they're working on. More coming up in just a moment here. WRJN Radio, stay right where you are. Civic Media Station, Hometown Radio Refreshed. It's 719.
The The Don Rosen Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WRJN weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Federal aviation investigators heading to the scene of last night's helicopter crash in the California desert. All six people on board fear dead.
The helicopter crashed southwest of here near Nipton, California, a community in the Mojave Desert along Interstate 15, which is the main route between L.A. and Las Vegas. It had taken off from Burbank, stopped in Palm Springs, unclear if it was to refuel or to pick up passengers. Then it continued flying in the direction of Las Vegas. The San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department saying no survivors have been found. Alex Stone, ABC News, Las Vegas.
Early voting begins in South Carolina Monday. GOP candidates are out campaigning this weekend. Frontrunner Donald Trump holding a get-out-the-vote rally today in Conway. Rival Nikki Haley set off on a two-week bus tour in her home state where she served as governor. Fan frenzy building in Las Vegas ahead of tomorrow's Super Bowl. Security also heightened with helicopters and drones being used overhead. This is ABC News.
Bucks finally get a win.
Hi,
I'm Mike Clemens at Super Bowl 58 with sports. The Bucks outplayed the Hornets to a 120-84 win for Milwaukee. Doc Rivers says the Bucks are adapting to his changes on defense.
I thought our defensive execution, I didn't see our guards get picked tonight. Like, they got over picks tonight, you know.
NFL, Jordan Love here at the Super Bowl, making appearances and doing some interviews. I asked him, what was the turning point for the Packers last season?
Man, there are so many things. I don't think you can pinpoint one thing that turned a point in the season. I think it's just a collection of being together through a whole year. Obviously, we had a lot of young guys that haven't been together. So just building that connection every day in the facility. Obviously, we did some things outside of the facility to help grow that bond. But, man, it's just a collection of everything we do as a team, the walkthroughs we do. And everybody's excited to show up to work and find ways to get better.
That's Packers quarterback Jordan Love. From Super Bowl 58 in Las Vegas, I'm Mike Clemens.
Richland Center weather. I'm Corey Hartman for today. Becoming sunny by this afternoon. We'll see a high near 39. A few clouds move back in tonight with a low of 23. Gradually becoming sunny on your Sunday with high temps around 40. For Monday, sunshine 45. Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high near 41.
Right now, it's 41.
Say it with me, the Bucks in six. And you can catch every play, every score, every Milwaukee Bucks game on News from the Center, WRCE, 1450 AM, 107.7 FM, your station for the Milwaukee Bucks, your hometown radio refreshed.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matt and Air on Air with Jane Matt and Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on News from the Center, 107.7 FM and 1450 AM WRCE, and on the Civic Media app.
Valentine's Day is here. This year, give the ultimate gift. Name a star after your sweetheart. This is Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. For 45 years, we've named millions of stars for celebrities, dignitaries, and individuals worldwide. For $59 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, you can give the most memorable gift. The star you name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Visit starregistry.com or call 800-282-3333.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black history story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. This is News from the Center, WRCE, 1450 AM and 107.7 FM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You are listening to the Civic Media Spotlight, where we recap segments from around the Civic Media Radio Network this past week. Up next, we head to Wausau and the Chad Holmes Show. Chad was joined by Yi Leng Zong of the Hmong American Center and a member of local government in Marathon County for a conversation about what's going on in the community. To hear the entire interview, you can check out the podcast for the Chad Holmes Show on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us, or wherever you find your podcasts.
And welcome back, Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. BowFallsRadio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. The time is 8:35. Currently, overcast skies, 33 degrees is the temperature here in downtown Wausau. And very happy to welcome Yi Leng Zong, Hmong American Center, D.C. Everett School Board, Marathon County Board, back to our program. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Chad.
There's a lot to talk about. And I was just saying to you before we started that one reason that I'm very impressed with what you've been able to do within our community is that our whole radio organization, we got stations around the state of Wisconsin, and our owner, Sage Weil, believes so much in democracy. And the only way democracy works is if people get involved and people are engaged, whether it is through elected office or whether through organizations or whether just being a citizen that's involved. And yourself, you have these different hats that you wear. And I was saying that you have the school board, where the focus number one is, of course, great education for the kids, trying to make them the best citizens they can be as they go into their lives. Then you got the county board, which of course has all the issues around Marathon County, and the Hmong American Center as well. Is it a part of a master plan of yours, or is it something that just, hey, here's an opportunity to be involved, I want to be involved?
Yeah, thank you, Chad. You know, as you mentioned here, one of the things I value the most is community involvement, community service, and being an individual who gives back to our community, especially to the home that's been able to give us so much things as well, to making us making the American dream possible for me and my family as well too. So this is one way that I've been able to give back to my family by mentoring, by serving DC School Board, giving back to our kids, to our children, to our students, the future leaders of the community here, serving on the county board, being a advocate for rural America or rural Wisconsin, serving our farmers, and then in my role as the executive director at a nonprofit here, I'm stretching every dollar that I can here, but at the same time making as much impact as possible to our underserved community or the Southeast Asian community, specifically the Hmong community here, by finding other, you know, revenues, other income streams to bring back to Central Wisconsin here and serving the low income community here. And I'm just so thrilled to be able to make an impact in the way that I am. Although I've never done this for awards or recognition, I've done this because I truly, sincerely love our community.
It truly is, I think, an example of true democracy in action, because the system doesn't work unless we are truly involved. So I absolutely, wonderful aspects to your life and career up to this point. Let's start off with the Hmong American Center. I wanted to kind of not assume that people, you know, knew what the Hmong American Center is. Maybe there's listeners out there that have not been familiar. Executive Director, could you talk a little bit about what the Hmong American Center is, what its goals are, and some of the activities you're involved with?
Yeah, so the Hmong American Center was originally established to help the Southeast Asian community, assimilate into the community here. Although, you know, the discussion about a melting pot is something that our community always, or America always talks about, we like to look at this more of a salad bowl, you know, because obviously salad's a lot more healthier than anything that's melted, right? But,
you are always thinking, I tell you.
So the salad bowl here, we want everybody to be kind of part of the whole bowl, you know, that we together, that individually we have our own characteristics, our own uniqueness, but together we serve as a community as a whole. So the Hmong American Center serves in that realm here to provide resources, to provide education, and leadership and collaboration to the Southeast Asian community and the community at large, just educating our community and also helping our serve the underserved community. We focus on six pillars of services in our community here: economic development, workforce development, education through cultural cultural preservation through education, equal access to health care, and then we have services for elders and youth, and then we have our community empowerment, which includes direct client services. So direct client services includes housing, includes assistance with energy assistance, immigration, and so much more. It basically is general aid in our community because we fill in that gap, you know, that the other communities are not able to serve. One of the things that I think is very important to note that we love to let the community know about the available resources in our community. So we do have a resource fair that's happening this week, Friday, from 4 to 8 at NTC, which will be a location for community members to be able to come by and be able to learn about the available resources that's in our community here, but also about the Hmong American Center as well. And most importantly here, you know, as it was announced earlier this week here, we did receive a large grant as well too from the local food purchasing grant, which will then allow us to purchase food or produce from our vendors, our farmers, farmers market, specifically from the Southeast Asian community here, to basically distribute back to community at large. And these food and produce are specifically Southeast Asian catered. So we're so excited about the numerous things that are coming ahead here.
That's very interesting about Friday's event at NTC. And whether you're a member of the Hmong community or a member of any part of the community, there are a lot of things that we don't know about. And I imagine it even takes it to a next step for the Hmong community, because often there could be barriers in terms of language and just not being as familiar with some of the opportunities. And there's nothing worse than having something that's out there, that's an opportunity that could help people's lives, and that's not knowing about it. So I imagine that part of what you do at the Hmong American Center is just that, letting people know about what is out there in terms of opportunities to get education, whether it's financial benefits, anything out there, correct?
That is definitely correct here. We also actually have seen an increase in not just Southeast Asian individuals coming to the Hmong American Center, but we've seen Hispanic, we've seen our new neighbors, you know. But then we also see General Wazonian as well too, showing up as well too for services and assistance as well too, and we're able to connect them with other resources that exist in this community as well too.
Again, we're talking to Yi Leng Zhang of the Hmong American Center, the Marathon County Board, and the DC Everest School Board here on Bow Falls Radio. I wanted to ask you, because within that group, and when we talk to groups like yourself that are always looking for that next opportunity to get resources in, so you can take those resources and get them out, and talking a little bit again about the umbrella of democracy, I wanted to ask you, have there been folks, whether elected officials or outside elected officials, that have been especially helpful in terms of what you are trying to accomplish? Because I do think that umbrella of democracy, people working together, unelected, elected, who has helped the Hmong American Center in terms of getting resources, who have done their job, I think, well to service democracy?
Yeah, so I have to say that specifically for the Hmong American Center here, we have definitely seen relationships with the state government definitely been a lot better. You know, we have definitely seen contributions from elected officials like Governor Tony Evers, who specifically reaches out to the Hmong American Center and the Hmong American community, encouraging them to apply for certain grants in our local state departments as well. Mm-hmm. To be very transparent, obviously in the past here, when I came in as the executive director, the Hmong American Center was on the verge of actually closing down. And it was through working in our communities here with our local partners that we were able to sustain the organization. But it wasn't until 2020, where the pandemic occurred, and also 2021, where we were aware of these resources that were available at the state. Mm-hmm. And when we were aware of them, we began to apply for those services and continue to giving back. And one thing that's very important is that throughout the entire state of Wisconsin, any area where there was a Hmong Hmong Association that received funding from this, the state government, local government, etc., we saw that there was an increase in services towards Southeast Asian community, and Southeast Asian communities were actually being served as well too. So we're just very proud of the amazing things that our organizations are able to do because of funding and support from our local funders, state funders, and we're looking forward to continue working with our federal funders to do that as well.
He mentioned other organizations around the state. Do you work a lot with other areas of the state? And maybe just for my education, for others, what other areas of the state have significant Hmong and Southeast Asian communities?
Yeah, so that's a phenomenal question here. So Milwaukee has the most largest population of Southeast Asians or Hmong individuals in the state of Wisconsin here. Wausau is probably in the top three or top two. Madison has a large population. The Fox City has a large population. Eau Claire does as well. But, you know, Wausau, we beat them all per capita. Mm-hmm. So we are we have the largest Hmong population per capita in the country here, from my recollection.
In terms of Wausau, in terms of the Hmong community, do you feel like, I know we got a mayoral election coming up, is the Hmong community listened enough by our local officials?
I think it could always be better. You know, I think our elected officials locally knows that the Southeast Asian community, the Hmong community, is is the margin of victory locally, statewide as well too. Mm-hmm. Obviously we know that in the previous years, with whether it was the presidential election or governor election, they won by 1% or less than 1%, and the Hmong population makes up about 58,000 of the state of Wisconsin here. So they are a population that definitely has a huge margin of victory. And I think locally our elected officials are attempting or trying to get to know that, because I get outreaches from the many elected officials in the local area here to meet with the Hmong community. Obviously, I don't do that in the role of my executive director functions, but I do that on my personal area, trying to get community members connected as well too. And it's not just about being Democrat or Republican, but it's about working together to make sure that people are being practical, making sure that things are happening, results are being delivered, and making sure that everybody gets served as well.
Something else I've noticed over the years, we run a Hmong language radio program on Sunday mornings here on this radio station, and from time to time we'll get calls about being on that show in terms of advertising, because there's an economic power now within the Hmong community, isn't there, that people are noticing?
Yes, there definitely is. I was fortunate to attend a conference or symposium, back in October, and they were talking about the buying power in Minnesota. They talked about how it used to be, I believe it was $600 million. Now it's over $2 billion because of the economic and the power, the economic strength, and also the influence that the Southeast Asian community have. We're still trying to gather those influences locally, but I would assume that ours has definitely increased from what it was before as well. But one thing I do have to note is that for the first time in history, the Hmong community's medium household income surpasses the state's average by $10,000 in the state of Wisconsin here as well too.
What's been the key to that?
Yeah,
Obviously, whenever, no matter what immigrant group comes into our country, it takes time to build from the family unit to the community itself. What's been the key to that? Because that's a very, very interesting number.
Yeah, so I definitely think it has to do with education. Education and also chasing the entrepreneurial spirit, the American dream. But I think the key to that and the foundation that made this really happen was basically the tenacity and grit of our elders and our parents who built this foundation on. They sacrificed their entire life to make sure that the individuals like myself, the new future generations, are able to build upon it, and they sacrifice going to school to make sure that we're fed so that all of us can go into an education and learn and become successful individuals. So they are the reason why we are successful, because they continue to maintain that steady platform for us to stand on.
Is the Hmong American Center also, you talk about, I think, community. Is it looked at as a place where community is able to continue to be embraced within the Hmong tradition?
Yes. So one of the things we do is we have a huge focus on education, cultural preservation through education. And we do this through efforts like the From Laos to America Museum, where members of the Southeast Asian community can come back and learn about their heritage. But not only that, we also facilitate serve as an area where communities can come and facilitate discussions, dialogues. And we have seen our local clans utilize our space here. our elders use our space there, essentially the Hmong professionals using our space there, and youth as well too, using our location as well. And we're fortunate to be that organization or that focal point for our community.
We have to go away for about a minute. We're going to come back, maybe talk about the other hats and the issues that you're working on with the county board and also the DC Everest School Board. So we'll come back in about 60 seconds and talk more with Yi Leng Zhang here as we continue on this Wednesday morning. The time is 8:48. Chad Holmes Show, Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230.
The Chad Holmes Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WXCO weekday mornings from 8 until 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. News from the Center, WRCE.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded the Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We end this hour of the Civic Media Spotlight by heading to Matinair On Air, where Jane and Greg speak with Jeff Green, the CEO of Wisconsin Battery Corp.
Good morning, and welcome to Matinair On Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Calvin on the board. Very happy to be joined by our guest. He is the CEO of the Wisconsin Battery Company, a company owned by Sustainable Communities Corporation, and they're coming to Portage with plans to make batteries, but this time out of hemp. So, Jeff, You did mention that it's a union shop. It's going to stay a union shop. How many jobs? Right. How many jobs are we talking about ultimately, do you think?
So I think we're going to start up with probably around 50 to 100 in each Fenimore and Portage, if we are able to accomplish that. And then over the next 5 years, we're expecting to ramp up at about 100 a year. So we expect 500 to 600 over the next 6 years.
That's great. These are family sustaining jobs. I think it's really important for people to recognize that.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, obviously technology is moving forward. And so we're trying to stay with the times of making sure that Wisconsin stays a battery state. I mean, Wisconsin's been a battery state since batteries were created.
I did not know that we had a long history.
Beyond the cheese.
Beyond the cheese. Back, we're always trying to highlight things in Wisconsin that aren't just dairy products.
Yeah.
I did not know that we had such a long history of batteries in Wisconsin.
And some of the most prolific battery scientists in the world are in Milwaukee.
So we got two questions on our text messaging line, and I want to ask them both. They're in the same category. One, hemp batteries, are they recyclable? And also, are there any rare earth metals needed to produce hemp batteries?
So we are finalizing our bill of items on all of our batteries right now. So whether or not there's any, you know, sodium, I guess technically is a, you know, is one, but sodium is so massively present right now. It's not anything that we're worried about. But we're trying to eliminate, you know, lithium. We're trying to eliminate graphene. We're trying to eliminate the things that are problematic.
Well, and again, as you mentioned, so, unfortunately, those mines tend to be in countries that are not necessarily friendly to the U.S.
Right. And as far as recyclable goes, we're going to try to actually create a lithium-ion recycling plant on the same property. Wow. But right now, you know, Ukraine, I don't know if you know this, but Ukraine was the world leader of fertilizer. And so with the war in Ukraine, fertilizer has actually gone up. I don't know if you've looked at fertilizer lately, but it's doubled in price. And that's not just, you know, Home Depot jacking the price on you. That's Ukraine having some supply chain issues. And so we're looking at ways that we can turn this lithium into fertilizer, because your plants like lithium. And, you know, that's part of the overall big scheme of what we're doing. The outer shell is still going to be metal, and we can recycle that, obviously, but you can recycle anything, but it all has to come down to economics.
Sure. It's got to be cost effective, right?
Right. And Dr. Chu has, our scientist has a method for recycling that prior to Ukraine going into war was not cost effective. Now it is kind of very tightly cost effective, but that's assuming that Ukraine never comes back and becomes, you know, a fertilizer supplier again. And that's not really something that I expect. So I think that it's just a dangerous situation right now that we've got to economically figure out. We want to recycle batteries. That's not, it's certainly within our mission, but making sure that we do it effectively, you know, daycare workers, we're trying to put subsidized daycare in both of our factories as well.
Oh.
Both subsidized daycares and recycling are both non-profitable.
Jeff, that is so wonderful. Subsidized daycare within the facility. And yeah, as you said, it doesn't generate profits. But good heavens, we've been talking about this since 9 to 5 came out with Dolly
good
Parton
reference.
And Jane good Fonda reference. And Lily Tomlin. I mean, that was a intrinsic part of that movie. And yep, it's 2024 and we're still so far away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that important to you to include that, Jeff?
The daycare industry financing fell off a cliff federally over the last year. So what you're finding is young workers, and, you know, we are attempting to bring a pension program back into the market as well. So,
whoa,
but
what?
To do a pension, you've got to have a balance of young, middle, and older workers for it to work. And so being able to hire younger workers early in their family, if they don't have daycare that's affordable, yeah, they can't work, or only one of them can work. And that's going to be, you know, counterintuitive to what we're trying to accomplish. So we are also putting together a incubator program for our retirees so that if they want to go out and do something afterwards, they can get educated on how to do that as well. So that's, you know, we want to basically have this as a generational business.
Jane, are you hiring? I'll be up there in like 4 hours.
I was trying to find a keyword that I could just throw at Jeff and make it sound like I actually know what I'm talking about when it comes to batteries. Oh, nano sheets.
Good job, Jane.
You want to talk carbon nano sheets, Jeff? I'm the guy.
My nano sheets have a thread count of
If someone is listening and they would like to find out more, or possibly apply for a job, or find out about training opportunities and stuff, Jeff, where should they go?
So our email is work@winbat.co, and that's where anybody that wants to submit a resume should do.
Okay.
Winbat.co is our website. That's going to be drastically overhauled over the next 6 months, but right now at least it's a four-pager that keeps all of our media in one place, and you can contact us and find out more about what we're doing. The groundbreaking, obviously, is April 23rd in Portage, and I invite anybody that wants to show up to be there. We're expecting some pretty high-profile political people there.
I would imagine so. Everybody's going to want to claim a piece of this.
Yep. Yeah.
And I'm assuming that Portage has been really open to working with you?
Oh, amazingly so. The mayor, as well as the entire council, have been fabulous to work with. We've got a call tomorrow on the industrial revenue bonds. I don't know if you're familiar with that form of financing, but the city has to approve it. And getting a city to approve a industrial revenue bond is not something that just anybody can do. It's something that they have to believe in and want for their city. And obviously, we got unanimous support a couple weeks ago. So
such exciting news. It's wonderful. And thank you so very much for joining us, Jeff, and explaining a little bit better how this is all going to work. I hope we can have you back on after the groundbreaking.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Jeff Green is the CEO of the Wisconsin Battery Company, coming to Portage and a battery near you. News is coming up next.
Matt Nair on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday mornings from 10 till noon. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. Ithaca's choice for news, talk, and sports. News from the center, WRCE, 1450 AM and 107.7 FM.
Monday on Nightlight, I'm joined by OnTheWalkie.com's entertainment reporter Matt Miller and Wisconsinology's Frank Anderson. Join me from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's 2024. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you live across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Jane Matt Nair.
And I'm Greg Bach.
Join us Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to noon as we break down the news and share some laughs along the way.
We're talking to politicians, we're talking to community leaders, and we're talking to anyone who has a story.
And we occasionally get a visit from an umbrella cockatoo. Join us for Matt Nair on Air Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to noon.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.